and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, August 29, 2023. A senior UN diplomat visiting South Sudan says the country needs to help returnees escaping the violence in Sudan.
They're here. They need support. They need to get back to their villages, to their towns, or to places of their choice. They need to make sure that their houses are not occupied by other people.
And the Sudanese military leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, says he wants to end the conflict in his country through peaceful means.
We are very keen to put an end to this war and the suffering of our people. We in the Sudan Armed Forces are committed to fighting to establish a genuine transitional government.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations says 39 civilians were killed and scores of others injured when mortar shells hit Nyala town in South Darfur State Tuesday. Eyewitnesses say a known number of injured individuals are receiving treatment at Nyala Turkish Hospital amidst limited medical supplies. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
Eyewitnesses in Nyala town of South Darfur State say a plane believed to be belonging to the Sudan Armed Forces allegedly dropped a bomb on civilians in High Sika Hadid, south of Nyala, on Tuesday. Isa Dafalla, a resident of Nyala town who fled to the neighboring Edain in East Darfur, confirmed to VOA via a messaging application that most of the civilians killed in the airstrike were displaced from their home earlier last week when the fighting intensified between the two rival groups in the center of the town. He says 29 civilians died on the spot while 10 others succumbed to their injuries at the Nyala Turkish Hospital.
The total death toll up to this morning has reached 39. And the injuries are still being treated at Nyala Turkish Hospital.
The United Nations reports that the Turkish hospital is understaffed and is struggling to cope up with influx of wounded people. Residents of Nyala town say telecommunication towers have been damaged during the fighting. Electricity and water system are no longer functioning. Repeated calls to the military spokesperson, Brigadier General Nabil Abdullah, for comment on this story went unanswered. Dafa'alla describes the humanitarian situation in the town as dire, with thousands of families trapped inside their homes.
Nyala now is experiencing a harsh humanitarian situation amidst lack of intervention. Most of our families are still stranded within the town, and I appeal to both the army and the rapid support forces to stop fighting temporarily so that civilians are able to vacate the fighting zone.
Adam Rijal is the spokesperson for the General Coordination, a body linking aid agencies to the internally displaced persons in Darfur. He told VOA via a messaging application from Nyartiti town of Central Darfur that hundreds of families in Nyala are living in what he describes as miserable conditions. He says the ongoing fighting between the Sudan Armed Forces and the Rapid Support Forces trap civilians in battlefields, while aid workers are unable to access Nyala town due to insecurity.
All roads are difficult to access, and in other areas, they are blocked. There seems to be an organized looting checkpoints set up by the militias who are controlling roads that link Darfur with other towns.
VOA could not independently verify the accounts of the eyewitnesses from Nyala town. The UN International Organization for Migration, or IOM, say an estimated 50,000 people were displaced by renewed clashes between the SAV and the RSF from 11 to 17 of August in Nyala town. VOA conducted Yusuf Izzat, the political advisor to the RSF's commander, for comment on this story, but he did not reply several messages sent to his WhatsApp number. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit, in Juba.
Still on Sudan, Sudan's chairman of the Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, is in Cairo after he recently made several public appearances. Experts say he's eager to interact with the international community to find a settlement to the almost four-month conflict. The paramilitary group RSF, which has been engaged in heavy battle with Sudan's armed forces, has stated that it is ready to cease the conflict through peaceful resolutions. Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
In a statement, the leader of Sudan's Rapid Support Forces, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, said his group is ready to resolve the conflict with Sudan's armed forces peacefully, with a settlement that will lead to civilian rule. Dagalo says he wants talks that will include political parties and civil society, aim to restructure Sudan's national army and address the root causes of Sudan's wars. Hala Al-Karib is a regional director of the Strategic Initiative for Women in the Horn of Africa. She suggests Dagalo's comments are at least partially for sure.
It's kind of trying to, to appeal to the international community, to the regional actors, and just to, they think that they can actually, wash their crimes and what they have done by just showing up and say that. But the grievances are way too much. And the level of violence that has been happening in Sudan, for the past, since April 15, it's historical.
She says the RSF and others involved in recent violence, abuse and atrocities must be punished for their crimes.
Without very serious compromises from the RSF sides, without, them accepting, responsibility of their crimes and accepting mechanisms of justice, and come clean about that. Even if Burhan wanted to do that, even if an agreement was signed, that will be a recipe for another cycle of violence, in my view.
The RSF's vision to end the more than four-month conflict through a negotiated settlement comes as the leader of the Sovereign Council and Sudan's armed forces, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, visited the coastal city of Port Sudan Sunday, where he met government representatives and the United Nations officials and aid agencies who have set up a humanitarian base. Dr. Edgar Githua, a lecturer at USIU and Strathmore University, specializing in international relations, peace and conflict, told VOA the emergence of General al-Burhan in public is a sign of a man who is afraid of being sidelined in the country's future.
He's trying to also just gain acceptance and gain it's confidence building, not only to himself, but also to the international community. And I have a feeling this conflict in Sudan is coming to a point where he's beginning to realize that the longer it prolongs, the longer he will isolate himself internationally. So going forward, there will be overtures that will definitely try and bring about. He will be open to talks, discussions, negotiations towards de-escalating the whole situation in Sudan.
Conflict between Sudan's armed forces and rapid support forces broke out in April after the rival leaders failed to agree on how to lead the country to civilian rule. A power struggle ensued between al-Burhan and Dagalo, also known as Hemeti. The warring parties sent delegates to Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, in an effort to reach an agreement, but the talks were unsuccessful. Githua says for talks to succeed, it will take some time.
Eventually, at some point, Burhan and Dagalo will have to come in front of the international community and cameras to shake hands and to bury the hatchet. But for now, if it's the representatives that are doing it, so be it. But I know Burhan will not want to meet with Dagalo anytime soon. He hates him and he considers him to be someone very junior and minor to him.
Al-Karib says her country needs a peaceful settlement that will stop the war and suffering.
I don't think the country can afford short-term solutions anymore. We have been on these cycles of short-term solutions for very, very long time and failed agreements. And every agreement fails. It takes us to an atrocity and violence that's worse than the one before.
The ongoing conflict has resulted in over 4.6 million people being forced from their homes. And the UN says that 6 million people are on the brink of famine. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
For more on Sudan's Army Chief, General Abdel Fattah Al-Burhan's travel to Egypt since the outbreak of conflict in April, we go to Nabil Biagio for what General Burhan told the Egyptian people.
Burhan was received by the Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi in Egypt's northern coastal city of Al Alamein after flying from Port Sudan. Burhan briefed his Egyptian counterpart on recent developments in Sudan.
We aim in this visit to explain developments in Sudan to Egyptian leadership and the Egyptian people. Sudan and Egypt are neighbors, and together we have shared responsibility for the two nations. We wanted to give the Egyptian authorities the correct picture of what is happening in Sudan.
Burhan described the conflict that began on April 15 as an attempt by a small group of people within the Rapid Support Forces leadership to seize power by force. He accused the RSF of looting, killing, raping, and displacing civilians, accusations that the RSF routinely denies. He said the visit is aimed at addressing issues related to hundreds of thousands of Sudanese who fled to Egypt after fighting erupted in Khartoum.
We also wanted to discuss with the Egyptian authorities the situation with the huge number of Sudanese who fled fighting and took refuge in Egypt. And I would like to thank the Egyptian authorities and the people and everyone who facilitated the entry of Sudanese fleeing fighting into Egypt.
Burhan reiterated his commitment to restore a transitional government and hold free elections in Sudan.
We are very keen to put an end to this war and the suffering of our people. We in the Sudan Armed Forces are committed to fighting to establish a genuine transitional government, after which the Sudanese people will be able to decide how to run their country in a free and fair election.
The conflict between Burhan and his former deputy turned rival Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, who commands the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, has erupted since April 15 and spread from Khartoum and the western region of Darfur to Kordofan and Jazira State, killing thousands and forcing millions to flee their homes. For months, the RSF had besieged Burhan inside military headquarters in Khartoum. But last week, the general made his first public appearance and visited troops in parts of the country. Conservative estimates from the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project show that nearly 5,000 people have been killed in the conflict. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a senior UN diplomat calls on President Salva Kiir to help returnees escaping the violence in Sudan. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's a bad habit that you have struggled to give up?
Bad habit. I love sleeping a lot. Yeah, that's my bad habit. I love sleeping. Sometimes I fail to catch up on time because of sleep.
That habit of being jealous to my wife, yes, that one. I've tried to be to control myself so that I should not be jealous of her, but I do fail.
A short temper, because I think that it is a genetic, so I can not give up.
I tend to overreact when my kids do something wrong, and I end up regretting the consequences of my actions after giving them too tough punishments.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The head of the United Nations Agency for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, is in South Sudan on a three-day visit. He called on the government of South Sudan to provide basic services across the country to returnees escaping the violence in Sudan. The UNHCR official spoke in Juba earlier today at the end of his three-day visit to the country. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Filippo Grandi, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, says he visited South Sudan following reports about challenges facing returnees and Sudanese asylum seekers who fled from the conflict in Sudan. He says while UNHCRA and other aid agencies continue to provide support for the settlement of the returnees and refugees, the government of South Sudan should be part of the effort.
They're here. They need support. They need to get back to their villages, to their towns, or to places of their choice. They need to make sure that their houses are not occupied by other people, that property issues are resolved. They need to be able to send their kids to school. They need to be able to access proper health facilities if they are sick.
Grandi says he met President Salva Kiir on Monday and discussed challenges facing returnees. He says Sudan's ongoing conflict is worsening the situation in South Sudan.
But maybe this is an opportunity to really strengthen the commitment of the South Sudanese government towards its sole citizen. You know, the social contract that always must bind a government with its people. And this is an opportunity to strengthen it and to show that the government is serving its own people.
Several returnees are appealing to both the government and aid agencies to come to their rescue. 25-year-old Alekair Kaman was a student pursuing a diploma in information technology at the International University of Africa in Khartoum. She says her family lost everything when the fighting erupted in Khartoum in mid-April.
Now, life is hard, okay? We don't know what to do because we lost everything, even our education. Almost finished, now it's just stopped. We don't know even where we're going to start again from zero. And, like, life needs you to survive on your own. You have to have money if you get sick to go to the hospital and all these things.
Marie Helene Vanni, the UNHCRA representative in South Sudan, says transporting returnees out of rank transit camp to their final destinations remains challenging. She says at least thousands of families leave Malakal on daily basis on barges to their villages across South Sudan.
And this is mostly 90% it's South Sudanese. In the transit center, it really fluctuates. I think we're about at an average of about 6,000 in the transit center. But of course, there are plenty more who are not in the transit center. They're actually in the city in rank, in various other places in rank. Difficult to estimate exactly.
Ajok Awat Dao, another returnee at the rank transit camp, says many students who escaped the violence in Sudan have no access to education.
It's not good. We just stay at home, no school. We didn't go to the school. We spend all our time in home. If they can help us to go to complete our education.
Grandi says aid agencies need $356 million for providing assistance to returnees and refugees in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Wak Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still in Juba, we go for some happy news. Some South Sudanese are excited by the performance of their national team, the Bright Stars, at the FIBA Basketball World Cup 2023 after beating China 89-69 on Monday. Some residents of the capital, Juba, say they believe the country could even win the FIBA World Cup 2023. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
Following South Sudan's first victory in the ongoing FIBA World Cup in Manila Monday, some South Sudanese say they are happy their national team has bounced back from its disappointing opening loss to Puerto Rico. In Monday's game, South Sudan beat China 89-69 points as it fights in the race for the second round. Samir Bol, a Juba-based basketball fan and sports journalist, says Monday's victory over China was significant for South Sudanese.
I think this game is very important and very beautiful and different because small country, new country, face old country and country of civilization like China. So for us as South Sudanese, is a big achievement. And even if we lose the rest of the games, it's not important, but the important that this young country defeat this big country.
Ball adds that he believes South Sudan's team will perform even better in the coming matches. South Sudan is expected to face a stiff challenge to reach the second round as they prepare to face Serbia on Wednesday, August 30th, for their final group game. Another Juba resident, Simon Deng, says he is happy with South Sudan's performance. Deng says the country's performance at the World Cup will help change her image from a war-torn country to a sports companion.
The reason I'm happy is that if you see South Sudan, many of the things South Sudan will be known because of the conflict and has not been known because of the good thing like basketball. The sport nowadays is something that is coming up. It's more than even the politics. So it is good to see South Sudan doing well.
Peter Ajak Mayom, a resident of the Jonglei State Capital Bor, says he believes the South Sudanese team beat China because the players planned for the game. Ajak says Monday's performance and the victory over China will portray a positive image of South Sudan.
I'm very happy and I really wish them to continue so that they will tell the world that South Sudanese are not only known for bad deeds that they are doing to each other in their own country, but they will also want to show the whole world that we are also good in basketball.
He says he remains hopeful that South Sudan will fight to the end and bring the World Cup to Juba.
Then finally, we will be happy when the boys will return home with the World FIBA Cup.
Following Monday's victory, South Sudan is leading Group B, which also includes Puerto Rico, Serbia, and China. A majority of players in South Sudan's national basketball team are dual nationals of the US, Canada, and Australia. South Sudan was accepted into FIBA in 2013, 2 years after the country declared its independence. For VOA News, I'm Charlton Doki in Juba.
From Juba, we go to Harare, where Zimbabwe's main opposition party, the Citizens Coalition for Change, today called for a fresh elections after disputing the results of last week's vote, which it called a fraud. In Harare, CCC deputy spokesperson Ostalos Siziba told a news conference that Zimbabwe is entrenched in a deep political and electoral crisis, and called on the African Union and the Southern African Regional Bloc, SADC, to return the country to legitimacy.
The only resolution and way forward articulated by CCC, in terms of doubt and confusion, is that Zimbabwe needs a fresh and broad and proper election to exit the current crisis.
Siziba says thousands of citizens were denied their right to vote in Wednesday's election.
As the citizens' movement, we believe without doubt that the election on the 23rd of August 2023 does not reflect the true will of the Zimbabwean people. The election was flawed, the entire process was shambolic and illegal.
Last Saturday, the Elections Commission declared incumbent President Emmerson Mnangagwa of the ruling ZANU-PF party and the winner. Several international observers have said the election fell short of democratic standards. George Charamba is the spokesperson of President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Here is what he has to say.
So clearly, the bowling is in his court. He must simply dismantle his ego, which appears to be soaring complexly so, and realize there is a winner who has become a president who is in a government, and therefore a president who is, in fact, presiding over the affairs of the Zimbabwean state. Once he assumes that temperament, I can assure you it will be very easy for the two to meet.
That's George Charamba, the spokesperson of President Emmerson Mnangagwa, speaking there from Harare. Still on election matters, a federal judge has set the trial of former U.S. President Donald Trump for next March on charges of plotting to overturn the 2020 presidential election. This puts the historic trial right in the middle of 2024 presidential campaign, with Trump the front runner among Republican candidates. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Lawyers for former President Donald Trump were back in Washington Monday for a hearing that set a March 4, 2024 date for his trial in conjunction with his alleged effort to stop the peaceful transfer of power at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2020. Trump's lawyers had no comment for VOA, but expressed their disappointment to the judge. They had asked to put off the trial until April 2026, after the November 2024 presidential elections. The prosecution wanted the proceeding to start January 2nd with jury selection in December. One expert told VOA he believes U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan is a strong judge who made a wise decision.
She made some very good points that the public really needs to know. They need to know one way or the other before this election, you know, whether Trump is guilty of these very serious charges.
A grand jury of citizens in Washington voted to indict Trump on four felony counts in the case, including conspiracy to defraud the United States and conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding. He has pleaded not guilty to the charges and has repeatedly claimed, without evidence, that the charges are politically motivated.
How can my corrupt political opponent, crooked Joe Biden, put me on trial during an election campaign that I'm winning by a lot, but forcing me nevertheless to spend time and money away from the campaign trail in order to fight bogus, made-up accusations and charges?
Trump has said the indictments are only boosting his support among voters. But one of his Republican opponents, former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, disagrees, saying there is no way Trump can win a general election.
Republican voters have to understand we can't win with Donald Trump, and that's why I addressed it very directly.
Many of the January 6 events happened out in the open for everyone to see. Presidential historian Alan Lichtman says, leaving Trump vulnerable to a possible conviction ahead of the November 2024 presidential elections.
What if Trump is sitting in jail, which is not impossible either? Technically, he could still run, but would the Republicans really want, at the top of their ticket, a guy who's been convicted of subverting our democracy?
Trump is the first former American president to face criminal charges. If convicted, he could spend the rest of his life behind bars. He is also facing charges in New York, Georgia, and Florida. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, August 29, 2023. We now leave you with Emerson and the song Tutu Party. We've been listening to Emerson and the song Tutu Party. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Chang, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Somebody,